Okay, we're doing Netivot Shalom and Parshat Balak. Our subject is the sin of Israel in Shittim. And the Netivot Shalom had described that there are two foundations to Kedusha. He said there's the Emunah, the strength of Emunah. We have the Kedusha and the Emunah are the two foundations of Avodat Hashem. I'm sorry, not the two foundations of Kedusha. The two foundations of Avodat Hashem, the service of Hashem, are Kedusha and Emunah. And he said the Emunah runs in our veins. It's a part of who we are. And the only way to challenge that Emunah is to work through the Kedusha, to work at a person's holiness, to try and bring a person down through his desires, to bring a person, you'll try to take him head on with the Emunah, it won't work, because that runs in his veins. You take him down with the Kedusha, so then you could also affect the Emunah. The two are intertwined. So, he quoted that maybe that's the idea behind Atate Shufenu Akev, that God said to the serpent, you'll be able to get him through the heel. In other words, you'll be able to get him through his desires. Vainyan meduyak mod baktuvim. And if you look at the verses, you'll see, if you look closely, you'll see this concept. Shenemal, the verse says, Vayachar am liznot el benot Moav. The nation, what does it mean? Vayachel. Vayachel means they became like chulin. They were desecrated. They were brought down with their promiscuous activity with the daughters of Moab. Vayitzamed Yisrael Baal Peor. And then Israel connected to the paganism ways of Baal Peor. What started things rolling? Their promiscuity with the daughters of Moab. That's where Bilam came and advised Balak He tells him, you want to know how to get there? That's the way to get there. Work through their desires, work through their Kedusha, and then you'll also get to their Emunah.
It was the daughters of Moab or Midian?
Both. But it stresses the daughters of Moav. V'kevan sheshor shapgam haya b'znut im b'not me'av, being that the root of where they were able to blemish us was through the daughters of Moav, al ken kine Pinchas u'masar nefshol letaken inyan zeh. So Pinchas looked at the root. He knew we weren't running after Baal Peor without the girls around. He knew the problem, the root of it all, was the fact that they were running after the girls. Shua sholesh, that was the root. Ukmamar Chazal, as our sages said, Harotzela Korav Dazara, the Talmud says you want to uproot paganism, Yesharesh Acharea. Look for the roots of the paganism. It's not enough to take the idols and say, let me knock down the idol. That's not where it starts. Look where the idol came from. Kasher Yeshna Metzel Yehudi Pgamim Be'emunato, if a Jew sees that there are blemishes in his Emunah, in his connection to Hashem, Siman Sheyeshno Shoresh Lekach. That's an indication that somewhere there's a root that gave that forth. Where did it all come from? Sharei kamur etzem ha'emunah tvu'a b'tchunat nafsho shel Yehudi. We said it's second nature for a Jew to have emunah. That comes naturally. Ve'im bechol zot olim bo hirurim v'sveikot ba'emunah rachmana litzlan. And if nonetheless he ends up having second thoughts and doubts, Hashorish lezeu bipgamim haituim. So then you have to know where the root, where does the root lie? It lies in the known blemishes, shehem hashorish poreirosh velana, mimenu nimshachim apgamim beemunah. That's the root that bears fruit, this bitter fruit. Balken Pinchas lo nigash letaken et achet shel avodah zara. That's why Pinchas doesn't even deal with the paganism. Ela lakach al atzmo b'mesirut nefesh letaken et shorish apgam. Pinchas focuses on the root. Where is it all coming from? Achichet bnot Moav. That was the sin of the men running after the daughters of Moav. Shemimenu nimshach achichet Baal Peor. That's where the sin of Baal Peor emanated from. Now this is a very scary concept. Rav Nachman talks about this too. Rav Nachman says, if a person finds himself interacting with machlokot shelo l'shem shamayim, if a person finds himself connecting with things that are wrong with his emunah, he should check himself with his kedusha, with what he's doing, with his desires, with his where are his fantasies? Where is he letting his mind wander? Meaning, we like to look at what's happening between rabbis, between all kinds of things in politics or the like, and say, what's wrong with them? Wait a second, why am I focused on that? Because something's wrong with me. We're not saying the world is fixed. We're saying we have a choice what we focus on in the world. And this concept is also very powerful. If you look around, it's phenomenal to see. Many people will tell you, of course there's a God. Of course Torah is important. But my girlfriend's important too, and I don't like the Torah limiting me with my girlfriend, etc. You see a lot of people that in their emunah, they can get to tremendous heights. But it's their kedusha that they're not willing to hold on to, and through that, they fall with all their emunah. If you look around here in Israel, it's so common, it's so rampant, but it's throughout the world. You ask a person, what do you believe? He tells you what he believes. But then, why aren't you living this way? Well, I have my desires. I don't want to. So Kedusha is harder. Emunah is easier. Yes, the average Jew, even a Jew who doesn't observe, he'll tell you, Al tireni kacha. Don't look at me like that. Ani shomer kippur. I keep Yom Kippur. Everyone tries to sell you, not in a bad way, in a good way, what they're doing right. You know, I donate here, I donate there. My wife asked me about a guy who fixes shoes. So I told her, I don't know who to tell you anymore. I went to this guy, and he ruined my first pair of shoes. I went to the next guy, he ruined my second pair of shoes. But each of them told me how much tzedakah and chesed they do. I could tell you, this guy funds this, and that guy will tell you he funds, he's the prime donor of the kollel out in such and such a place. I can tell you all the beautiful things they do, but fixing shoes, they don't do well. So I don't know where to take the kids' shoes to. Both of them, each one ruined a different pair of shoes of mine. I brought them something small and I ended up with shoes that don't work. But you see, people in their emunah, the guy will tell you how much money he gives to the kollel. In the emunah, everyone's striving. I think that it stems from emunah. It stems from a connection to Hashem. There's a reason why he wants to fund the kollel. There's a reason why he takes care of a widow. Almost every time
it's a kind of justification by himself. So I do this, so God bless me.
Maybe.
I don't know, because I don't know the guy. But you have a real emunah, must be bring you closer to God. I mean, if not, it's just kind of, look, I daven 3 times a day. I came in the proper time, so for what reason I do this? Somebody complain, oh, it's so hard. Why he complains so hard? Because he doesn't like. If he's like, it's not, what is so hard to daven? It's not hard. So,
there might be an element of that. I think we all have that to some degree. We try to buy God off. Some of our avodat Hashem is, let me placate God. But I think it also stems from a good place. I think in many things people are real. They have real emunah and they really want to connect to it. The thing that pulls them down is the kedusha. I don't want that. I don't want. Emunah comes natural. You see, I was once sitting in the other room and my wife had playing a speech by Netanyahu before Rosh Hashanah. Now I was in the other room, and I hear him talking Be'ezrat Hashem, and I hear Hashem's name maybe 15 times in one speech. I couldn't believe it was Netanyahu. I ran to the other room to look. This is Rosh Hashem Shelti Yisrael. This is how he talks. you don't connect. You say, wait a second, if this is how he talks, how does that connect to all the other things he does? Because the emunah is there. It's a part of us. But when it comes to action, so then the fact that we don't want the kedusha, and the kedusha is much harder, well, that could bring down the emunah, and that could bring down everything else we do too. Yeah?
How are we supposed to do introspection in order to realize where we're not living up to, where our kedusha is not living up to our emunah?
I think that it's not a question of kedusha living up to the emunah, but it's a question of building the kedusha. And that goes step by step. Meaning a person walks into Machon Meir, we don't say anything about it. And then after he starts learning and he suddenly realizes that a Jew is not supposed to have a non-Jewish girlfriend, so then at his pace, he has to advance. Then he realizes that there's a prohibition of Negiya. When he goes on a date, he's not allowed to touch the girl. Then he learns there's a prohibition of Yichud. Then he learns he's not even supposed to be looking at girls. It's a process. So different people are at different stages of the process. You can't just say, where should a person be in Kedusha? You know, different people are supposed to be in different places depending on where their starting point is. Yes, there are laws of what we're supposed to think about. We know there's a biblical prohibition, Lo Techmod. There are many halachot regarding Kedusha. But it's a process. I don't think you can ask that. Each person has to work from where he's holding to move forward. If we want to understand what did Pinchas really fix, we have to begin with an introduction. Technically, the externals that Bilam and Balak represent, we already encounter in Amalek. As the Holy Zohar writes, if you take the last two letters of Bil'am, Ayin Mem, you take the last two letters of Balak, Lamid Kuf, you get Amalek. Because Amalek is at the root of what they both represent. And Amalek, when they fought Israel, also fought us on those two fronts. The verse says, Asher Karecha Baderech. Rashi says the word karecha comes from the word carry, from defilement. What he wanted to do was to defile us. In the end of the pasuk it says, asher karecha, the holy works, I'm sorry, right, that the words asher karecha represent krirut, kar, cold. What does that mean? How do Hasidim describe a good Jew? They say, Avar Meyid. You ever hear how Chassid describes a good Jew? He's a warm Jew. When you want to hear a recommendation about someone, a Chassid, one of the strong recommendations a Chassid will say is he's a warm Jew. What does it mean to be a warm Jew? A person who's really connected. But the truth is, the idea of Amalek attacking Karcha being Tum'ah, and Karcha mean to cool you off from Emunah, the truth is they're both together. Because Emunah is implanted in us. As the Pasuk says, Vayaminu Bashemu v'Moshe Avdo. Even when they were in the depths of Mitzrayim, 49 steps down, nonetheless the Emunah was there. But through the Tum'ah, suddenly they could doubt it. Suddenly you say, wait, is this for real? And if a person will be true to himself, he'll find that there's much of that. It's very connected. The Rambam writes about Aristotle. He's such a genius. Why doesn't he get it? Why are we on diverging paths? Because Aristotle doesn't want to let go of his promiscuity. Aristotle is drawn to certain things in the physical world, and he knows that taking that step is going to preclude him from all of that. So Aristotle sees things differently, but that desire affects his worldview. The Rambam says there are 3 points we differ on, but those 3 points, they're the greatest chasm between the Rambam and Aristotle. So that's how Amalek thought to overcome us. Amalek came to fight us before we received the Torah. we had just left Egypt. We were the chosen nation. And so Amalek comes and tries to sever us from that level, to take us down. Chazal tell us, Kol ha-gadol mechavero yitzro gadol emenu. The greater a person is, the greater his desire, and the more a Jew elevates himself, every stage of our lives, the higher a level we're on, the greater the test will be. It's not only about a person, it's also about the times in our lives. Yisrael, when they left and they were zooming upward to the receiving of the Torah, so then Amalek comes zooming against them. Every Jew, when he reaches times where he tries to go up, he has to be prepared that there are going to be a tremendous yetzer hara that comes against him to knock him down. There are times in our life when we're given this gift, we're given a window, an opportunity to advance, to zoom forward. It's exactly those times that we find zooming against us some kind of brand new yetzer hara to deal with us, to deal us that blow. No, no, you're not going to do it. It's just not going to work. This is something which I saw repeatedly in my life. I remember in yeshiva we had this. Guys would come down with all kinds of illnesses. The top guys suddenly had splitting headaches. They couldn't focus. Suddenly they had terrible stomach conditions. They couldn't learn. You had guys who were doing great, and suddenly they had to contend with tremendous hardships.
The reason for this again?
Because God created the world where there's always a balance. If you're going to give a thesis, there's going to be an antithesis. If you're going to try to grow, then there's going to be an equal and opposite force standing in your way. The more you try, you're going to grow, the more there's an equal and opposite force. It could be the person. The greater a person is, the greater there's an equal and opposite force. It could be the time. If it's a time in your life where you're trying to grow, be prepared. There's going to be something stopping you. In my life, every time, almost every time, I was getting ready to come to Israel, so then something big stood in the way. There was something huge standing there and a tremendously important reason not to come, not to make Aliyah. And it came up, boom, just then. And it seemed catastrophic that if I would make Aliyah, so many things would fall apart. So many things. Every time we try to move forward. I'll tell you an interesting thing. We were about to inaugurate the shul. So many people dedicated a lot of hard work and dedication and planning, and we're holding the last week before the shul is going to be ready to go up to a new shul to daven. And suddenly I hear that so-and-so is saying, I don't know if I'm going to come to this shul, and so-and-so is saying, you know, this one took all. I heard all kinds of claims. I spent the next 2 to 3 hours on the phone calling every person who was involved, people who I knew and didn't know. And I said to each one the same speech. I said, look, we're in the home stretch. In 1 week, we will be in the shul. The way the world works, the nature of things, is that this week, there's going to be a tremendous challenge to enter the shul out of shalom, out of achdut. We have to stand up to that challenge. There's going to be a little nuance where this one's going to feel resentment. Why did he take that seat? Why didn't I get that seat? Why didn't he ask me before he took the seat next to the window, next to the air conditioning, further from the window, closer to his kid, closer to my kid? We're all going to face that. We're about to enter something which can be a great unifying factor in our lives. Well, the nature of things is that right now, the next week is going to be so challenging. We're about to make it. But it's going to be on the verge of exploding and self-destructing. So now it's up to us to overcome that. Everyone has to take on themselves. I'm not going to let that happen. And every person, when they're married, sees it on the eve of Shabbos. You have the greatest peace about to settle in, and almost every house, you have tremendous fireworks. And it's not positive fireworks. People come to shul Friday night, and they're a little frazzled from what happened during the preparations for Shabbos. And I'll tell you a little secret. The same thing happens when a wife is preparing to go to mikveh. The couple hasn't been together for 12, 13, 14 days, and now they're about to get together. Classically, on that last day, the biggest fights happen. Why? Because whenever there's about to be a great elevation, even in one's personal life, so then the Satan comes in and says, I'm going to show you. No, you don't. And that's the way life works. Yes, the average couple, they might not tell you. It's a little personal. But the points of conflict are before Shabbos, before mikveh, before you're about to go on a date, before you're about to go on a family trip. So it's supposed to be positive, right? We're going on a trip, everything's great, we're going on vacation. No, you walk out to vacation, there's got to be that last line that he tells her, you know, why couldn't we leave on time? Or she tells him, you always have to go out on the vacation and someone's seething, or both. Why? Same concept. You're about to go up, so then the challenge comes and says, no you don't. And it takes a greater character to go up. It takes a much greater character to be able to swallow your pride and say, we're going to make this happen. It's a challenge. But it's a challenge that's reoccurring throughout life. Yeah?
So I understand that's how the world works. My question is, what is the purpose? Why does it work that way? If you want people to continue to grow, there are so many obstacles you can put in their way. Many people like to challenges. And many people are going to fall by the wayside. So instead of growing, you're going to have all the stagnation going down. So what's the point? If you want growth and you want creativity and you want people getting better, they can get better through that growth. Why send something where the overwhelming majority aren't going to meet that challenge? You seem to be setting the world backwards instead of forwards.
Right. So I can answer the question. I'm not sure I should. Rav Pesach Zatzal used to have a policy. If you ask me what and when, I have a hard enough time answering you. You want to ask me why? That you got to ask God. So I think that to a great extent, you're asking me why about why did God create a world where there are challenges. So I don't think I agree with the premise that most people don't meet the challenges. I think people meet them on some level. People still keep Shabbos. They don't have the Shabbos they could have had and they should have had. People still go to mikveh. They just don't have the night of closeness that they should have had or could have had. It could be, but maybe it's the other way around. Maybe a person has, in this challenge, potential to climb even higher. You know, let's take the example of a diving board. You have those people who walk across the diving board and fall into the pool. Then you have those people who take a little tap and fall into the pool. Then you have those people who really knock the diving board down, take a jump up, and dive into the pool. Now, without taking that jump down, you can't take the jump up. Without pushing it down, you're just not going up. There's a certain aspect where we have different approaches. So some people say, I'm going to enter Shabbos in silent mode. My wife is going to tell me things, and I'm not going to respond, and I'm going to just let things slide and try to recover from all the scathing remarks as I sit through the rabbi's speech Friday night, and I'll come home and I'll put a smile on my face and hopefully things will smooth out. But then you have a person who says, I know it's going to challenge me Friday night, and I'm going to overcome it. I'm going to find a way to smile, show warmth. And you know what happens when a person overcomes it? So then his whole marriage takes 10 steps forward. His whole Shabbos takes 10 steps forward. We look at the challenge as something bad. And it doesn't have to be that way. The Talmud in Kiddushin quotes that one of the rabbis spoke against the Yetzer Hara. He said, you know, what a terrible creation God made the Yetzer Hara. So the Yetzer Hara didn't like what he had to say about him. So he got dressed up as a pauper and he came knocking on the door. You know the Gemara? So he came knocking on the door. And they're having a lavish meal. And he says, you know, you're having all this meal. You're not going to give a poor man a little bit of something. How could it be? I'm standing out here all hungry. You're having all this meal. You got to let me have something. It's not right. So he's giving them this whole guilt trip, making a protest. They feel uncomfortable. They take him in. They put him in a corner seat. He says, you know, just because I'm poor, just because I'm wearing shabby clothing, you put me in a corner seat? You don't think I deserve better than that? Come on. What happened here? I'm your guest. So they put him in the front next to the rabbi. He sits next to the rabbi. They put his seat. He starts picking his nose and throwing it on the plate. He starts putting up phlegm and putting it on the plate. And they turn to him and they say, behave yourself. What are you doing? So he said, you embarrassed me. I'm at the front table. You talk to me like that? I don't believe it. And he turns red. He turns white. And he drops dead. So, remember, this is the Satan, right? This is the Yetzer Hara. He's coming to take revenge from the rabbi. So, he's lying there dead, and he makes it that they all hear the troops are coming. People are talking in the streets. Rabbi so-and-so embarrassed a poor man to death. So he runs out of his house, and he hears the troops coming. He hears the Romans are coming to get him. The word's out. He killed a pauper who just came and asked him for a piece of bread. And everyone's talking. And he doesn't know where to go. He runs into a toilet. So he's running to hide. And the troops are coming. And the Satan comes and looks at him and says, having a good time? So he says, no, miserable. So he says, I did it all. So he says, why? So he says, what you have to talk to me like that for? So he said, what do you mean? Look at what you do. You're getting everyone into trouble. So he says, yeah, but that's my job. You think I want you to do what's wrong? Or I want you to do what's right? I have a job. My job is to give you a challenge. But you got to overcome that challenge. Don't go talking about me not nice things. I'm only doing my job. Okay, so the Satan, Gemara goes on to, he asked him, okay, so what should I say about you? They had a conversation. How should I talk about you? But at any rate, coming back to our concept, it's true. There are certain aspects of the world we can't understand. But the challenges of the world, I'm not sure we have to view them that way. Let's take an example. Your kid comes home and has a book report to do. And they say, the kid says, Dad, help me with the book report. And you say, okay, which book do you have to read? So the kid says, Oliver Twist. You say, what a boring book. I'll review it and I'll tell you what it says in the book. So you read through the book and you come back and you say, well, here's what it says in the book. So the kid says, great, Dad, but I have to write a book report. So you say, okay, how long does it have to be? I'll give you a book report tomorrow. So the kid comes in and gives in a book report and gets an A. Did you do the kid a favor? You didn't do the kid a favor. But the kid's going to come and whine and tell you, but Dad, you know, Rebecca, our neighbor, her dad reads the books for her. Why are you making my life so difficult? And her dad writes the book reports for her. I don't understand. What are parents for? Why don't you help me? So when it comes to our kids, we can understand that you have to deal with the situations and then you will actually grow. And if you don't, you won't. I want to tell you, I had a teacher in high school who was so vulgar, I would blush. He started class with probably the most vulgar piece of literature I ever heard. And he continued the whole year. He was a vulgar creature. I don't even know what to call him. And I went to our Rosh Yeshiva in high school. And I said to him, I don't think in a yeshiva I have to put up with this. This is just ridiculous. The way the guy's talking, the way the guy's behaving, it's beneath any level that a yeshiva should expect a student to have to partake of such a class. I don't think it's fair. I want you to give me permission. I'll take the test. I don't want to be in the class. And he said to me, no. I said, but I'm telling you, it's just vulgar. It's not right. And he said to me, in life, you will have to deal with vulgar people. And in life, you will have to deal with situations that are not fair. And running away from the situation in the name of religion is not the solution. Deal with it. I didn't like him very much. I liked him, but that day I didn't like him very much. And I didn't like his answer. And Every time I had class with this teacher, I'd be sitting there gritting my teeth at him. I have to say, he taught me a lot. Not the teacher, the Rosh Yeshiva. I learned a lot from that. That's a lesson that sits with me. It's been a decade and a half since then. I learned a lot from it. So I think it's difficult. I can tell you that at the time, I didn't believe I was learning a thing. I was ready to swear every day. He doesn't know what I'm going through. And when at our high school graduation, this teacher got up and said, I want to tell you how I started up my class this year. They gave him an honorary role to speak. And this teacher took the same vulgar book and in front of all the parents and the Rosh Yeshiva, he read the he wanted to show them his skill, how he could capture everyone's attention. He read that same line and I felt vindicated. I said, okay, the Rosh Yeshiva, now he knows what I was saying. But you know what? A decade and a half has passed and I look back and I feel bad for him that he had to go through that embarrassment. And he was right. He was right. But if you would have asked me a decade ago, oh, I was still seething. Some things are so hard. It takes a very long time till we can look back and say, wow. Chazal tell us there were three levels. It says, Eov was beaten, he yelled. Aaron was beaten, he was silent. David was beaten, he said thank you. But you see, you have giants of Jewish history who couldn't say thank you. Aaron HaKohen, with all his greatness, he's on Moshe Rabbeinu's level. But he's not on David's level. He can't say thank you. Don't expect that from Aaron. Aaron's greatness is in his capacity to not say anything. To be able to grit his teeth in silence. Vayidom Aaron. He's silent. So, it takes greatness. I'm not saying we're on that level. But on some level, I think we can perceive. You see, Chazal allowed us to perceive it. I think that the answer on an emunah level doesn't really answer. That's why I didn't want to get there. Because on a why question, we can always unravel this more and then have a much, much, much longer discussion. I think it gives some direction of thought. Yes. But just for the sake of fairness, class is over. Whoever has to go deal with things, go deal with whatever you have to deal with, and we'll continue. Yeah.
So many... maybe going back. What did David say thank you for?
Odecha Hashem ki anaf tabi. I thank you, Hashem, for you smote me because you beat me. Now, the simple reading of the Medrash is that the Medrash understands that Eov lost his children and all his wealth, Aaron lost his children, and David lost his children. First the baby, then before the baby, the murder. After the baby. One son murders the next, and then another son rebels and is killed, and then a third son, he paid after. Yeah, I'm saying. And David says, Odecha Hashem ki anaf tabi. I thank you, Hashem, that you punished me. Yeshua b'chaut nachameini. I pray that your anger ceases and you comfort me. He's not asking for it, but he is saying thank you.
What did Aaron do to be punished that way? His children dying was a punishment on Aaron for trying to do the right thing and stall the Jewish people from doing idolatry by using his seichel wrong.
I want to look inside. I think there is a Medrash Tanchuma that goes along the lines of what you just said, but I want to see inside. I'm not sure I'm remembering correctly.
Even the categories of the sin and the way that it doesn't seem like they're really comparable. One is a sin that's stand the sin, and one is a sin that he thought he was trying to do the right thing, actually, and he made a mistake.
Wait. You're assuming that the sin has something to do with it. I was assuming the sin has nothing to do with it. I was assuming that whenever a person has a tragedy in their lives, they come back to the question, God, why'd you have to create a world this way? You gave me the Yetzer Hara, so I didn't live up to it, so now you're going to punish me? Meaning there's a person, that's why I said on an emunah level, we didn't really answer the questions. That's why I wasn't sure if we should enter it at all. But I was assuming that the Medrash was dealing with a totally different aspect. I didn't understand the Medrash to mean that it's a question of what sin they did. Rather, it was a question where why they deserved it is a separate question. But now that it happens, there's a challenge. How do I deal with the hardship, with the punishment? Why Eov deserved it? Why Aaron deserved it? Whether Eov deserved it? It's a separate question. I didn't view that as part of what the Medrash was dealing with. I viewed the Medrash as how did people, giant people in Jewish history, deal with pain? And the Medrash singles out one person who was able to say thank you. One. And Aaron HaKohen is very big. You're not talking about, you know, you're talking about Aaron HaKohen. You're talking about someone who's equated with Moshe. A discussion in the Medrash, who was bigger? Saying you're talking about one of the greatest people that ever lived. And yet his level was that he could be silent. Now, the fact that David, it doesn't seem David was on Aaron's level. If we take the Midrashim about the two, it certainly doesn't seem that David was on Aaron's level. And yet, in this point, it seems that he supersedes Aaron. So it teaches us something, and this is a lesson that Chassidut stresses, that it doesn't take the giants of Jewish history to do giant actions in Jewish history. Sometimes it's the small person. I once wrote a story about this. It's a long story.
Here's my point, what I meant, is that when we're comparing them, that this one said thank you, or this one didn't, or whatever, the circumstances of one saying thank you are like easier than the other person to say thank you. It might be easier for David to have said thank you for the negative circumstances that I've gone through because everything you do is for the good, because he was told that by Hashem, through prophecy, I guess, that, I don't remember, he was told by the prophet, that he would have a life of suffering because of his sin, versus was Aharon ever told that, you know, because of you did this sin or whatever, I'm going to, you know, there's something's in the wings coming for you, or what, they're the challenges to say that, you know, that they were trying to overcome, to say thank you were different. It's different to say thank you when you're expecting a punishment than it is when you're not expecting a punishment at all, and you might not even be able to think of what exactly it was that you're doing. So to say thank you for a punishment is different than to say thank you for a punishment that occurred because of something you did two lifetimes ago, and that there are not equal challenges, I don't think.
I hear. Okay. Anything else?
The Medrash about the Yitzhahara becoming an old person. So one, literal or not literal?
That would be Machlokas, Rambam, Ramban, in all of Tanakh, so I assume in Shas as well.
Okay, fine. So it might even be literal. It sounds like the Yitzhahara actually proved this point, because a pious person would say, hey, listen, we're both good people at heart, I think. You know, you insulted me, let's have a chat. And, you know, it's actually the case that I really don't want people to sin. But I have a job from Hashem that I'm supposed to entice people, and, like, you know, I don't think that what you said about me was really fair. And, like, a good person would do something like that, and a person who's not, you know, who displays his flaws and stuff would, I'm going to get it back. I'm going to take revenge on this guy. I'm going to embarrass him, and that would cause all kinds of horrible evil to him and whatever. And then afterwards, you know, after I've stuck my dagger in him, then I'm going to, you know, we can sit down and chat. And that's a weakness and a failure of his piety.
Maybe, or else maybe he was doing him a favor. Because the rabbi said, Gira beinecha satan. The rabbi said, an arrow in your eye, Sutton. Meaning as if he was taking him on. And the Sutton was coming and telling him, you don't want to take me on. Believe me, you don't want to take me on. Because if you want to take me on, I'll win. You know, be happy I'm letting you go. I'm doing my job. But don't you start challenging me. Because it's not in your interest either. You want to challenge me, I can make life difficult for you. Meaning it could be on the contrary. The Sutton was saying, you have to learn how to daven. I'm surprised the Sutton was so nice that he agreed to take out of his time and teach the rabbi a lesson.
I'm confused by the answer. I don't know.
The Sutton was coming and telling him, this is not the way to talk about me. You think the Sutton cares? The rabbi must be on a pretty high level for the Sutton to actually take out of his time You know, how many people wag their fingers at heaven and lightning doesn't strike them? Well, they're not important enough. Why should lightning strike them? But when this rabbi says something not nice about the Satan, he says, Giro beinecha Satan, may arrows go in the Satan's eye. So the Satan stops his busy workday, whatever that means, and says, hey, let me show you a thing. What are you starting up with me for? He doesn't lose anything just because the rabbi spoke that way about him, but he still came and taught the rabbi something. He says, hey, you're not allowed to talk that way about God's angel. He came and taught him a shir, he taught him a lesson. You see, the Gemara bothered writing it. It's not because it's a fantastic story, great, wow, we have a great cartoon, right? No, there's a lesson there. See, I have a question the other way. Why did the Satan care? This rabbi must be pretty big that the Satan stops his day to do this whole game.
A level of, is that the general way of God that we should settle this, you know, like he settles disagreements or he wants his malachim to settle.